Penguin Random House Audio presents The Platinum Age of Television. From I Love Lucy to The Walking Dead, How TV Became Terrific. This is the author, David B. Inkooly. Introduction. If you're going to look at the history and the evolution of television, quality TV in particular, there may be no better place to start than Mel Brooks. He was writing for Sid Caesar in TV's early days in the 1940s and 1950s, and teamed with his fellow Your Show of Shows veteran Carl Reiner in the 1960s to record the first of several classic comedy albums featuring his 2,000-year-old man. Brooks, in character as the oldest man alive, had seen everything and had his own funny spin on it all. And because Brooks, in real life, has been witness to the entire history of television, I asked him to put it all in perspective, his perspective. He says, warming to the challenge. Let's begin. First of all, in the beginning, there's a like 4-inch picture tube that you have to look at with a magnifying glass to begin with. And now, in Carl Reiner's living room, there's a 100-inch screen which will blind you, you know? That has changed dramatically. At the beginning, there were only a few shows. And very quickly there'd be a thing called a test pattern, with a kind of whistle, a whine at the end of it. That meant for you to wake up and turn off the TV, you know, so they had that sound. And everything, of course, was in black and white, and fuzzy. It was all fuzzy. And then it was clear. I don't remember when we went to color. We were in black and white for a long time. But today, all television has changed. I mean, all television now, you can see really good writing. I mean, really good writing. I love Breaking Bad. I love The Good Wife. I love Downton Abbey. I love Justified. I think these are wonderful. There are others, too, but these come to mind and pop up right away. They are ones that are wonderfully written and wonderfully acted, you know? I love that there are that many, and I'm glad that they're around. As am I. As a TV critic for more than 40 years, I find it's always the good television, not the bad stuff, that keeps me going. But how did television characters evolve from the meek high school science teacher Wally Cox played in 1952's Mr. Peepers NBC sitcom to the villainous one Bryan Cranston played in 2008's Breaking Bad AMC drama? What inspired the writers, directors, producers, and performers of some of TV's best shows to make their shows? And if the 1950s, because of the artistic achievements of such live anthology dramas as Paddy Chayefsky's Marty, later remade as an Oscar-winning movie, and Rod Serling's Patterns, are revered as television's golden age, what age are we in now? And when did that begin? These questions turned out to be more difficult, more challenging, and ultimately more entertaining to answer than I originally thought. In evolutionary terms, you have to think both technologically, how advances in the medium from videotape and color to satellite, cable, and streaming impacted the product, and creatively, how, genre by genre and subject by subject, TV tended to become more sophisticated and complex. Then you have to define and pinpoint the start of your new age of television. To test and advance my theories of TV evolution, I interviewed dozens of people whose work in television over the decades I have most admired, not only to learn what previous entertainers and programs had inspired and influenced their own, but also to ask about their early formative relationships with popular culture. What did TV, and for the more senior people, radio, mean to them when they were young? What in particular inspired them to do what they went on to do in the medium of television? And as I examined all these questions, I stumbled upon one more, which ended up informing and flavoring this book as well. What did television mean to me? Why had I become and remained a TV critic, and what had that life given me in return? The Platinum Age of Television addresses all those points, starting right now. The Platinum Age of Television. First, let's establish the meaning of the phrase, the Platinum Age of Television, and why I'm comfortable both employing and defining it. One of the earliest printed uses of the term comes in my own 1992 book, Teleliteracy, taking television seriously. If the 50s were the golden age of television, I wrote then, the quantity and quality of today's TV offerings make the modern era worthy of the appellation the platinum age of television, unquote. And when we consider what was to come in the decades since, that platinum age term, which plays off the recording industry standards awarding platinum records to indicate sales even higher than those of gold record sales winners, might have been prescient, but it was also a bit premature. So when did the platinum age of television begin? Eventually, I narrowed it down to three possible starting points. The earliest is 1970, when Grant Tinker created MTM Productions and launched the Mary Tyler Moore Show sitcom on CBS, starting a quality revolution in both comedy and drama. The next is 1981, with the debut of MTM Productions' Hill Street Blues on NBC, which changed the look, pace, and content of weekly TV drama series. And finally, there's 1999, the eve of the new century, when television gave us one of the last great dramas on broadcast TV, NBC's West Wing, as well as one of the first great cable dramas, HBO's hugely influential Sopranos. All three dates and arguments have merit, but I decided on the most recent as the most compelling. And I find that date persuasive because I've been an avid TV viewer through all those decades. Rather than reflexively arguing that the good old days were the best, I'm an old dog pointing out that the new tricks are even better. The platinum age of television, as I define it, therefore, is the period from 1999 to 2016 and beyond. The theory of quality television evolution. Charles Darwin had his theory of evolution, and I have mine. Mine has to do with the concept of quality television, what it is, and, more crucially, how it got that way. Just as Darwin used fossil records to try to understand how today's life forms developed from yesterday's ancestors, I'll use examples from the fossil records of television history, from past TV shows themselves, to draw links to the present, and even to identify some of the missing links along the way. Take, for example, the topic of single working women on television. In the 1950s, the prototypical single working woman was embodied in the CBS sitcom Our Miss Brooks by Eve Arden, portraying a man-hungry, marriage-seeking schoolteacher. In the 1960s, the ideal was Anne Marie, the character played by Marlo Thomas in ABC's That Girl, an aspiring actress in New York City, living alone, but with a devoted boyfriend for the entire run of the series. By 1970, though, and the Mary Tyler Moore Show, things start getting more commendably complicated. Moore's single working woman, Mary Richards, dumps her boyfriend and moves to Minneapolis in the series premiere, setting up herself and her series as an example of independent feminism, focusing on her career, dating a series of men, and taking the pill. At the end of the 1980s comes another single working woman in television, this time as the on-camera star, Candace Bergen as the newscaster Murphy Brown on CBS, a character who famously inflamed a national debate when she chose to have a baby out of wedlock, enraging the then-vice president, Dan Quayle, by her lifestyle choice. And in between Mary Richards and Murphy Brown, you have a key missing link. Blair Brown in NBC's Days and Nights of Molly Dodd, playing a woman who has several serious relationships with men while trying to support herself in the publishing field in New York and define herself creatively and emotionally. Her status as a divorcee aside, Molly Dodd was a specific character type that would be explored again in the following decade in HBO's Sex and the City, starring Sarah Jessica Parker as the sex columnist Carrie Bradshaw, and the decade after that in HBO's Girls, starring Lena Dunham, who also created the show, as Hannah Horvath, an aspiring writer who, like Carrie in Sex and the City, surrounds herself with a cadre of friends to help her make her way through the trials and romances of life in the big city. From Mary Richards to Hannah Horvath is quite an evolution, but the steps along the way are clear and intriguing. And no matter the genre, this evolutionary pattern replicates itself as both the programs and the characters become significantly more complicated. The interviews. In seeking out people.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?